Hello and welcome to episode 41 of the Back to Front show, making it three times within a month, Kieran.
Indeed. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. The sun is shining.
Is it?
Yeah, but it's Cheltenham Gold Cup week, folks.
Yes, indeed.
Are you race fans?
Yeah, race fans.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Keir.
And to you. Do you have a trace of the Irish in your...
Absolutely nothing, no.
Nothing?
No.
Nothing?
Oh. There's a lot of Irish in Cheltenham right now, though.
Right.
There are.
Well, big race fans.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. I've been following some of the antics of some footballers. That's soccer stars to any of our overseas listeners.
Yeah, we should probably keep that... Keep this clean.
Whoever, let's say, been enjoying themselves a little bit too much.
Yes.
Yeah.
On a balcony.
On a balcony. Yeah.
But everyone can Google it. Cheltenham racecourse footballer
balcony.
Balcony. You'll find it.
Yeah, you will. But so does the ambience of the Fair City of Cheltenham change dramatically over the race week?
Put it this way, I won't be going into the town centre.
Really?
No.
Today of all days as well.
Yeah, tonight of all nights.
So yes. Did you see what the president, I'm assuming he did it himself, he doesn't have some operative to do this or some secret service man dressed with, you know, dark glasses.
We're not talking about Obama here, aren't
Obama,
we?
Obama, yeah.
That president.
I believe there is only one.
Well, of the United States, yes.
Well, no, just one, the president, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, POTUS.
Mm-hmm.
He threw some green dye in the sort of fountains in front of the White House. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen this.
But he seemingly did it 2 days ago, so I'm not sure if anyone told him that, you know, the 15th wasn't St. Patrick's Day, or were they just...
Yeah, but when do they dye the river green in Chicago? Isn't it for an extended period?
Do they dye the river in Chicago green?
The whole river turns green, yeah.
That's a lot of dye, isn't it?
Yeah, I always wonder about the sort of, you know... Well, I suppose there's probably no life left in that river, but anyway.
How do you get rid of it? Do they think on Thursday we're just going to dye it back to normal? How does that work?
Everyone downstream must get St. Patrick's Day Lane.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's, yeah, anyone know the answer to that? I'd love to know. I think this is what we should be tackling. These are the questions.
Each Hightown residents.
Well, you live with one.
Well, I do, yeah. I could just go into the living room and ask. But
do you think that's the kind of knowledge that your wife would possess, or is it a bit too trivial?
No, I think she'd know.
Yeah, she probably would.
We'll find out on the next episode.
On the next episode of the Back to Front show, live with Kieran's wife. We could get her on the show. Do you think she'd do that?
Unlikely.
Unlikely. Anyway, how's fatherhood treating you?
Yeah, good, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All the fun of the fair, all the fun of the races. Indeed. Yeah, it was jabs this week, right?
It was jabs this week. Pretty tired.
Yeah.
This morning after last night. Yep.
So what? Yeah. They get over that pretty quick. They're just a bit fussy.
Thanks.
It's the ones when they get to like four and they actually realise what you're doing to them. That's when they really hate you.
Yeah, and they fight you.
Yeah, they fight you and they fight the person giving. Oh, and it's a nightmare. But anyway, listen.
Right.
I
thanks for that, mate.
I listened back to the last show because it's the only podcast I do listen to.
And uh-huh. Same here.
The you know count was off the scale.
It
was Beckham-esque. And I've got to be honest, I think I was pretty guilty, but you, it was up there, mate.
Was it?
Yeah.
I was feeling very tired while I recorded the last episode, I have to say.
Yeah, but it was good, considering your tiredness.
Yeah.
It was good. But we've had some correspondence in.
Have we?
Yeah. The carrier pigeon has dropped off some kind words from some listeners. So I think, we've got, I think all of our core four listeners are back listening to the show.
That's good.
Yeah. Mr. Roberts, of course. Mr. Wiggins. Although Mr. Wiggins did complain of some audio infidelity.
That was me.
He said there were some weird ghosty sounds.
Yeah, that's because I was in the living room with my mic on the arm of an armchair and it kept wobbling around.
You did what?
I know. Total lack of professionalism.
See, the only reason...
Obviously, Wiggins spotted that a mile off.
Yeah.
Called me out on it.
We blamed your chimney.
Yeah, there was some whistling in the chimney that day. It was pretty rowdy outside.
Now, do you remember when we had that conversation? The only reason we don't do video casts is because we've got this veil of professionalism because they can't see actually how we live and work. Now you've just blown it.
Well, I'm sitting next to the fridge at the moment, so that's probably being picked up.
Wiggins will not be happy.
No, he won't.
He will rate that at least a 3.2.
He will. He'll be asking what the buzzing is in the background.
Yeah. Tom May's back on board.
Yeah, I saw that. Was that about China? Was he in China?
Yeah, I think he was on official business in China.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, we don't ask. Don't ask. Yeah, yeah, I believe it. Yeah.
Hush.
He just goes off to places, you know.
Oh.
And those are, you know, I just did it. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That's up to three. Tom, though, he used to listen to the show when he did his hoovering on a Saturday. Okay. So
to block us out.
Well, I wondered, yeah. Now you mention it. When he said that, I was like, oh, that's really cool. You do your cleaning to the Back to Front show. Then I was like, well, you're vacuuming, because vacuums are quite noisy, maybe it just spurs him on to do the vacuuming.
Must have a big house, mustn't he?
Oh, I think he's got, yeah, he's, yeah, he's
palatial.
Yeah. I think he's got a hot tub. That's just
really?
Yeah.
How the other half live, eh?
Actually, quite a few people have hot tubs. Are you thinking of putting one in your garden?
No. No.
I think if I put a hot tub in my garden, there would be no garden left. It's that small. Quite overlooked as well. I'm not sure I'd appreciate that.
You've got a few decks to your garden, though.
Well, we have no decking, although it's an
option. No. But you've got a terrace, haven't you? A terraced effect.
I think it's tiered.
Tiered.
Yes.
Would you put the hot tub on the top deck or the bottom deck?
Well, it's right near the path at the back. I mean, it could be a bit.
Yeah, that cycle path as well, isn't
it? Yeah.
Morning.
Morning. Morning, John. Dave. That'd be quite good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, who else has been listening? Oh, of course, HRH.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Lockwood. Now, I have a bone to pick with Mr. Lockwood. I wrote a recent article. I thought it was very good.
Even liked it and tweeted it.
About my favourite sandwich.
Just to be honest with you, I rarely do with your stuff.
I know, never, actually. I thought it was the first. I thought maybe someone had touched your phone. Yeah. You know. You'd gone to the bathroom and someone had grabbed your phone and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he accused me of being a hipster because I wrote about a particular sandwich of mine. Now, this coming from a man who makes artisanal, handcrafted knives. Do you think he's got an argument there or not? I'm not sure.
I think, you know, glass houses a little bit.
I think so. But, yeah, he's out there.
I had no... This shows how, how disconnected I am from the hipster community. I had no idea that a grilled cheese sandwich was up there with hipster activities.
Well, again, I'm not really. It's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. So, did Craig find this article from the Dallas something or other Community Times that I can share in the show notes that talks about the grilled cheese hipster revival, or did he see my article, accuse me of being a hipster?
And then Google hipster cheese.
Hipster grilled cheese. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll never know. But I do respect Craig, though. He did text me the abuse. He didn't do it in public. I appreciate that.
That is good. You don't want to get called out on Twitter about that, do you, really?
That means a lot to me. So that's friendship. I appreciate
that. That is.
But anyway, what are we talking about this week, Kieran?
We're talking about ads, Kier. And specifically ad blockers and an article by your friend and mine, Vitaly at Smashing Magazine.
Yeah, this was earlier this month, the never-ending story of ad blockers. Now, I always, whenever we talk about advertising, and I talk to people who publish online and people who...
Which is everyone these days.
Which is everyone these days.
Thank you, Medium.
Indeed. Guilty as proverbially charged. Guilty
as charged.
I jokingly say I'm probably the only person who works in effectively marketing or, you know, content marketing, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, that's what we do. You do the same. You do the same. You're not at the code face. We've discussed this. You know, we're out there building communities, but it's basic marketing.
You've got to use the word.
What, the C word?
No, the M word.
The M word.
Anyway, yes, carry on.
I quite like ads. Because I jokingly say, well, not really even jokingly, how do I know what to buy unless you tell me? Now, what is the big problem with ads online, do you think?
What's the problem with ads?
Yeah, why is everyone up in arms about ads on websites?
Well, I think, where to start? I think the problem is implementation, isn't it? So, like, some particular publications that will remain nameless choose to do things like background takeovers, full page, full screen takeovers, you know, the whole, I don't even know what they're called anymore. It's been so long since I've worked in that world, but you know, they gray out the whole screen and give you a, you know, a challenge, a roadblock style advert. That's what I was thinking of. That kind of implementation of ads is obnoxious, and the tracking that comes along with them is also obnoxious, isn't it? Like, you know, you search for shower screens on a plumbing site, and then suddenly shower screens appears all over the web. So that kind of implementation is probably the thing that most people feel objectionable about, wouldn't you say?
No, I do agree, of course. I think purely for the devil's advocate angle there, I was...
You really went for selling me on it, though.
Taunting you there, Kieran, taunting you. I think you're right. I think there is a trend now, and you could argue that the newsletter pop-up is almost just as intrusive without the tracking on most websites these days as advertising is. But
or take our survey.
It's always a good one. I like that one. It will only take you 15 minutes of your day.
Yes, only 14 pages.
Yeah. Yeah, we, you know, what there was, you know, some of the question. Anyway, that's another topic. But yeah, I think. But so here's the thing, right? You've got content-based websites that survive off advertising, and I think this is Vitaly's point. They're super conscious at Smashing Magazine about the impact of advertising on their revenue, but also about how it's displayed. And I think if you ask Vitaly, would you have a website without ads? He would say yes, if we could.
Yes.
So I think that more of the question is, do you think there's a sense of entitlement to great content? I mean, people turning off the ad blockers, turning them on rather, they're actually hurting that potential for that great content to continue, surely.
Yeah, I find there's an argument here for both points of view. And, you know, I don't feel strongly about either one in particular, but I do feel strong about both at the same time, if you see what I mean.
I have no idea. What do you mean?
I mean that, you know, there is clearly a case here that people have implemented ads in a, you know, questionable way. And this is left over from, you know, the world of the pop-up and the animated banner and all that stuff. And it's still going on. And it's often, you know, it breaks on mobile. It breaks on, you know, any number of devices. And it's a bit of a nightmare. And I think that people are blocking ads because particularly some of the bigger publishers who, quote unquote, don't get it or have taken a long time to understand how they can make digital work for them, or still haven't understood how they can make digital work for them, are throwing everything they possibly can at the page. And the amount of sort of visual noise on a page is getting more and more and more, to the point where it causes, you know, the content to suffer. Now, I wouldn't say at all that Vitaly and the guys at Smashing Magazine fit into that category, obviously. I think that they've worked really hard to create a balance between the two, and I don't find their site objectionable at all. You know, I don't, their ads aren't intrusive as far as I'm concerned. It's a very comfortable site to read. But there are sites that you go to that, and I go to them quite regularly, especially, you know, industry sites for film. You know, for example, you know, no offense, IndieWire, but IndieWire.com, they have this horrible interstitial advert that comes up when they deep link to an article. So, you know, the advert appears for 20 seconds or whatever, and you have to click skip to get to the article. It's just, you know, misguided. And that's why a lot of people implement ad blockers. And I think most people, at least most people that I know, would say to you, if you said to them, why do you use an ad blocker? They'd say, well, if everybody implemented these ads in the same way as, say, Vitaly does, or, you know, any number of other sites that have slowly managed to get the fact that people actually want to read the content, then we wouldn't have to do that. And the other piece of that puzzle is the tracking, of course. So a lot of people just want to to prevent the tracking.
No, of course. I think that's, you know, that's another conversation.
Yes.
But a huge part of this as well. But I think if you take it on the face value of the ads, And you're right, you know, the JavaScript that powers these networks and everything, you know, has all that added kind of tracking, and you're never quite sure where that data is going, and that whole thing as well. And that's you know, something that I understand quite a bit, but there are obviously people out there who understand this stuff hugely better than me, so I'm not really going to pass comment on that side of it. But I think what was more interesting to me was some of the stats, and admittedly the Vitaly published some Twitter polls, the results to those, and whilst 3,000 people, I think 3,090 voted on do you use an ad blocker permanently, which obviously does not represent their entire readership in any way, shape or form. You know, their numbers are huge.
Yes.
But out of that, 56% do, and only 25% don't. So 56 say yes, ad block plus, 10% ghostery, 9% browser tool, and 25% said no, don't use them, which I fall into, funnily enough. Do you use one?
On one of my browsers, yeah.
Okay.
So I have a browser that has ghostery, and I have a browser that doesn't.
Right.
Mainly because when I was developing, it's almost next to impossible to know what's working and what's not when you've got ghostery running.
Yeah. And then further down, Vitaly asked a question, New York Times, Washington Post, Wired are now blocking ad blocker users. Would you rather unblock or buy a subscription? 23% would unblock, 5% would buy a subscription, and 72% would switch to another site. And that was off 1,775 votes.
Yeah.
Now that to me is really interesting. And I think this is the area of this conversation that I find, really quite fascinating, is what's the alternative? In many ways,
this is the sort of the meat of Vitaly's article, isn't it? I found this really interesting. He actually breaks down all the options available to publishers, and you know, I think that there are certain things that really stand out, but they require a lot more, I guess, a lot more effort than a lot of. This sounds bad, you know. I'm not criticizing publishers, but maybe a lot more effort than they're used to putting in terms of product creation and community building.
Yeah, so I think for me this is really the interesting stuff. Now, we've talked before on this podcast about this kind of central entitlement with the web, how everything should be free, but at the same time, if everything's free, there is no such thing as free. You can't, everything has to be funded, even if it's a case of the writers donate their time for free, they donate their words for free.
Yeah.
The server's going to cost, or some bandwidth's going to cost, a domain's going to cost, you know, a CDN's going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
These things have to be funded. And if you want great content, we know how much effort, having been behind the scenes on Smashing, how much effort goes into an article. You know, they pay all the authors, they're peer reviewed. They don't come free. And, you know, the team have to eat as well. It's difficult. So obviously something like ad blockers will require publications like Smashing or other ones that maybe work in a similar fashion at the business model to rethink things. And what's really interesting about what Vitaly says is most of the things that you can try, things like asking for a regular donation, introducing a paywall, they don't work. You know, Flatter, that was around for a while. People could flatter your article, give you a couple of dollars. I mean, did you do that? Is that something you did?
No, and interestingly, in the video world, there's Vimeo just kind of silently, well, not recently, actually, just before Christmas, kind of silently got rid of a feature that they had called Tip Jar, effectively Flatter. I don't think these things are working at all. I don't think people want to, there was this concept that people would put like £50 a month into an account and would just share it around and share the love between the different things that they consumed for free online. But it just hasn't taken.
Vitaly finishes his argument, the article, I should say, talking about what the direction that they're going in, which is products and membership. So I think I can see a lot of similarities to sort of the music world in the 90s or 80s, where album sales were the big thing. They made all the money in the radio play, et cetera, et cetera. And things like touring and merchandise, that was a necessary thing to promote the album sales. And it almost feels like it now has gone full circle. Touring and this connection with bands in the live situation is where the money is, because we've become so digital. Actually going out there and seeing people live and
become a novelty.
Has become a novelty, and that's where the money is, because all the bottom has dropped out of the sort of I guess album sales. You know, we all stream and we pay our 0.00001 cents per listen to somewhere in Sweden, and the artist gets it eventually. So touring now and you know, things like deluxe albums with accompanying books and that kind of high-end stuff that you could never afford when you were a kid.
Vinyl's back.
So yeah. Do you think the digital world is going a bit like that, that you have to have another product, and the content, whilst it might have been your original focus, is now something that allows you to keep that conversation open, but in effect is merely promo for a product? And do you think a lot of publishers are going to have to rethink their strategy? Like Smashing always did books, but they've obviously got a big conference series going on now. I've just come back from the one in Oxford. It was 2 days with workshops, you know, really slick, great speakers, great atmosphere. And the blog, in effect, keeps them relevant between these points and keeps people coming back and acts as promo, whereas maybe their original intention would have been the other way around. You know, we have this great blog, we have relevant advertisers, and we've got we can get some extra revenue stream with conferences. To me, it feels now that more and more people, especially if you think about all the kind of online blogs that have conferences, the Generate series through Creative Block, the Next Web, Smashy Magazine. A lot of these were publications originally who branched out into the physical space and do books and workshops and conferences. Do you see any other similarities with that approach in other streams like film or video? Or
yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that from a publisher's point of view, they have always, you know, the leverage they've always had, as it were, is that they are experts in their field, and we previously paid for their commentary on a particular subject, whether it be film or whether it be the web or whatever it might be. But how I see it, and I'm basically agreeing with you, but how I see it is that this publishing of online articles effort that is what they put most of their time and effort into is essentially just their audience, as we would see in the film world, their audience building activity. This is what they use to create community or to create audience for their for other products, you know, other premium products that they sell. And I guess the same can be said for streaming audio, like you were saying, or could be said for making films available relatively cheaply on video on demand or on subscription video on demand. They are effectively using this to maintain an audience for premium products. And the advertising, I think if done correctly, can pay for that audience building activity. But I think that, you know, Vitaly and Smashing have the right approach of saying, well, actually, you know, we're going to create different revenue streams for more premium product, whether that be in events or whether it be books or whatever.
Do you think, what are your thoughts on these publications? We're talking outside the digital realm. I think Monocle is a great example of this, where they partner with premium brands and they integrate that advertising almost to the point of only with a trained eye do you know it's advertising. It's that kind of, do you think that's disingenuous?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is happening a lot more in the film world. There are brands that are actually becoming film makers, and there are brands that are effectively sponsoring the creation of film. And the same thing is happening in the magazine, the independent publishing world. You know, with I was reading that Standart magazine we were talking about before we went on air, as it were. And they basically have a roastery that sponsors each episode, that sponsors each edition of the magazine.
Right.
And their story is told through the magazine. You know, there's a little introduction to them at the beginning, then there's an article about them in the middle, and there's some more advertorial style stuff at the end. And it's quite open and honest. I think as long as it's open and honest, and the same thing goes for film, where, you know, Patagonia, for example, the high-end clothing brand, sponsored a film called Damnation and paid for the production and the distribution, etc., and used their retail outlets for distribution. And I think, you know, as long as the brand values align with whatever the person, whatever the product or company are doing, then it's totally fine. And you know, obviously brands have a big budget for marketing, and it makes sense for them to do something that is completely in line with their brand values.
Do you think? So yeah,
I don't see any problem with that. And I think that, you know, people who I guess when it's not completely 100% obvious that this is sponsored content, it's a problem. But when you do what Standart, for example, do, which is to say at the beginning of the magazine, you know, they actually tell the story of how they met and say, you know, we met these guys in a coffee shop in Prague, we chatted, they were interested in what we were doing, they offered to help us put out edition 4, here it is, you know. They actually say that at the beginning of the magazine. I think that's totally cool. But if you're trying to pretend that that you're writing about this company and you haven't been paid, then that's a problem.
Do you think readers object to that in the same way as sort of banner ads, or do you think there's a notion that maybe publishers have taken, I guess, more of an interest in the type of advertisers? Because let's be honest, not many publishers can be that choosy. If someone, unless it goes against your brand values to the point of it's an absolute no-no.
I think it depends what you're doing. So like, if I remember when I worked at Future Publishing, there was controversy when, and I won't name specific publications, but when a brand came in and wanted to advertise a product, that there was also a review in the same magazine for that product, and maybe that impacted the freedom of the journalist to write what they wanted to write. And there was always very clear that with brands that the content of the article would not be affected by the fact you're paying for advertising in the magazine.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some brands didn't allow that, so they weren't going to risk the fact that you're going to do a terrible review of their product, and then there'd be an advert for that product 3 pages on. You know, that they just wouldn't go for that. But you know, that's the nature of the policy that the company had, or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I can't help but think the future lies. Well, actually, take a step back. Have you subscribed to any online content that was once free?
Is
that something
never.
You do? No, I haven't either. It's not something I think I. And it's not that I don't pay for content. I think I pay for a lot of content. I buy a huge amount of books. I buy many magazines. I subscribe to 5 or 6 publications. They're all print, admittedly.
Well, that's an interesting point. So I would say, and you can tell me what you think, but I would say that I feel completely comfortable putting my hand in my pocket to buy a physical publication. So, you know, again, I buy books, I buy magazines. I'm perfectly happy to do that. I do resent slightly buying digital books and digital magazines and that kind of thing. And I don't think I have ever... I have subscribed to content. I subscribed to Railscasts.
Oh, okay. Video. Yeah, interesting.
But I would consider that educational content.
Yes.
As opposed to editorial content.
And that's... I almost... think that sort of falls out of what we're discussing a little bit, because I have done that as well. I think that educational video, I think because you know how hard video is once you've ever tried it, you kind of don't resent paying for that as much.
Well, not
that
I resent paying, also because it's giving you skills that have a commercial have a commercial bent to them, so you can, you know, you can watch Railscasts and then say, well, you know, I can build your Rails app and get paid to do that. Whereas, you know, if I'm buying, you know, I don't know, content about coffee online, there's not that same financial remuneration. But what I was going to say was that I do feel there's a real, like, as a real barrier for people in paying for digital content. And you can see that from Vitaly's surveys. People would rather switch to a different site than put their hand in their pocket and sponsor or become a premium member.
Mm.
I know that some sites have seen some success with this. I mean, no, I know it's not content. Well, it sort of is content, but Letterboxd, for example, I saw that quite a lot of people subscribed to them initially. I don't know what they're doing these days, but I would imagine that the interesting thing about that is they were very public about how many people were subscribing. And I remember subscribing to Forest back when Kyle ran Forest. So these are all very different. Forest, I'd say, was a community, and I guess Letterboxd is a community as well, which are different propositions, I think, to just straight New York Times or even Smashing Magazine style content.
Do you think once you've made once you've published for free, it's very difficult to turn back? I think you see that a lot with this sort of newspapers.
Yeah.
And many do succeed, and you could argue that maybe the engagement is increased by people who are willing to pay. But I think when you've effectively, blogs to me are newsy, they're regular, they're updated, you know, constantly, which kind of differs in a sense to putting out a magazine, which is a periodical by its very nature.
Mm.
It's more of it's delayed. It's, you know, it's kind of old news. They have a different appeal to me. There are some sites, and I will put it in the show notes, but the name unfortunately escapes me. I think it's the guy who runs a newsletter, and he picks, I heard him interviewed on something, and he picks 5 or 6 links from around the web every day and publishes them, and he's got this huge mailing list. Mm-hmm. And that's for free, but you can go on, I think it's for free, but you can go onto the site and they'll have like that days, but if you want to delve into the archives, you have to pay. And I think that's quite interesting. You know, you can get a couple of stories for free and the commentary, but if you would like more, and he built this whole way of enabling it through a WordPress plugin, which was very interesting. I think I shared with you a while ago when I came across it. That was just his approach to kind of enabling sort of micro publishers to enable that feature for very little effort. I'm not sure I do that. And this is not because I won't pay for great content. There's just something in me that feels that the world is so full of these sites where, you know, you can unfortunately turn to somewhere else. So I think...
But I also think there's something ingrained here, isn't there? There's something sort of like... There's something deeply ingrained about feeling comfortable paying for a physical product.
Hmm.
And feeling uncomfortable paying for a digital product. And I think, as you say, unless you're an expert in your field and no one else is talking about this subject and you have some unique insight, which you do sometimes see, like I sometimes go to film academic blogs and they've got a paper of theirs for sale for $9, for example, because, you know, a fellow academic or someone doing research for the industry will buy that because they have a unique perspective. Oh.
The Rosses.
The Rosses are out.
You're back in Wales again.
And but I think that this thing that's deeply ingrained in us that makes us feel comfortable buying a physical item is that you know full well that if you were going to buy another magazine about, I don't know, interior design or, you know, whatever, you'd have to pay for that as well. Whereas on the web, you're thinking to yourself, well, this site charges for interior design information, but I know full well that I can go to any number of other interior design blogs and get that information elsewhere. Or for that matter, I could go to Pinterest and use that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah,
I think there's also competition from other sectors in the digital space that there aren't in the physical space, combined with this sort of deeply ingrained thing of like, I'm quite happy to buy it as long as I get something in my hand.
Yeah, I think it is a fascinating area, and I think it's one that probably, when we've talked about the death of print, but equally I don't think what we'll look back on in 5 or 10 years is the way that you do content online that has a monetary value attached to it. I don't believe we found that solution. I don't think the way that will be handled, that we'll look back on and see as the definitive way, has happened yet. To me, it still feels very much in flux, and maybe it's about niche audiences, niche content, and people will pay for that. But maybe the more generalist stuff is too general. Maybe the way to do it is use these things as drivers for, you know, building a list or building a community, as you say, or promote, and having that as a way to enforce your knowledge for physical events such as conferences or workshops or seminars or webinars or whatever it be.
Do you think that there is an intrinsic link between perceived value of a piece of content and whether it is in digital form or written form? Because I think that's still a big issue.
I think so, yes. I mean, I've bought many physical books where the PDF has been delivered instantly and the book's arrived 2 weeks later and I've read the book and not the PDF. I do wonder though whether that's more how I like to consume content and have always consumed content.
Well, I'm the same, but I do wonder whether there's also an issue here about people's perception of somebody, let's say someone who's published in a magazine or in a periodical, compared to somebody who is published on the website of a particular. Let's say you've got a chapter in one of Smashing's books, but you've also got you've got chapters in the books, and I've got an article on the website. I would have thought that just by the very weight and value that we place on physical items, you would be considered a greater authority than me.
It's more cachet, effectively.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because for someone to have paid the money and taken the time and effort to put your words in print, therefore demonstrates you are a greater expert in that field than the person who's only been published digitally. And I think that's another point about people willing to spend money on things. You know, someone's had to put their hand in their pocket and agree to publish that book.
Yeah, I think there's something in that for sure. There's still something very special about seeing something you've written.
Yeah,
committed to a finite piece of, you know, a book in this case. You can't go back and change it and get your errors out.
No.
I think that's right. I just think that there is something. You feel the weight of what you've bought, don't you? And with the digital stuff, although with films, you know, you buy a film online or through iTunes, I don't feel that because it takes me 2 hours to watch it. This very weird sense of what is valuable and how you measure that. You can download an image from one of the many stock photography sites, and you can be paying hundreds of dollars for that because it gives you the right to use it over and over again, and you're getting a JPEG or whatever. It's the value is a strange thing to measure, but the way that we measure it often is monetary. And I think with online content such as blogs and things like that, and if people are putting ad blockers in just to bring it full circle, and people are turning those off, and that's going to fundamentally force those people perhaps to not be able to do these things. So is it a case of diversify or die? I don't know.
Yeah. It also makes me ask questions about things like Medium and their long-term goals.
I think, yeah, we should definitely discuss that because I think Ev Williams has talked that they're going to be releasing some paid elements to Medium. But he wasn't particularly clear in the interview that I read with him whether that would be a paywall or whether it will be that people through their publications can put a paid element to it. Or we have to subscribe to Medium, or it becomes a platform that costs us to contribute. I'm not sure. So it'd be interesting to see how these aggregators of content or these platforms for content, because they're not siloed. Even if you have a publication, it kind of links back to all the other elements of Medium. Whereas most platforms, you have your kind of instance, don't you? Your blog, and then maybe a link back to, say, you know, as Blogger was, or with WordPress.com and so forth. But it's not as interlinked. You know, you don't have your profile and recommendations and all those kind of things. So it'll be interesting to see where this desire for content to go. And I think one, just to sort of round it out, one other approach that I've come across, the Harvard Business Review is one that the other day you get 8 free views a month or something, and then you have to sign up and you get another 8. But if you want the whole site, you get more. So there's this kind of drip feeding of value. And if you really feel the value, you're going to pay up. So I think we haven't really answered the question, but I do think it's a very interesting area. And I don't believe we found the solution yet. Not me and you, but we couldn't anyway, not even if we tried, but the clever people. I think advertising is here to stay. And I wonder whether these stats are particularly skewed towards the industry that we talk about, whether you go on some of these tabloid sites, newspaper ones, and they're full of ads, whether most people are as interested or concerned as we are in this realm. I'm not sure.
I certainly think that, Vitaly's percentages for people using ad blockers will be far higher, given his audience, that's fair to say, than, say, somebody maybe at The Sun or, New York Times even tweeting out, who's using ad blockers. I think they get a much lower percentage. But I don't think you'd find any less people who are irritated by advertising.
Yeah. Cool. Anyways, if anyone's got any thoughts on that, do let us know.
Indeed.
And, we've got one more thing just to share, which it's not even funny. It's just a really nice website that you came across.
I did, yeah. It's Verdant Brewing.
Yes.
I just thought it was a really, really nice website, really well done, really simple and well designed and to the point. And I thought it was worth sharing.
It is, and it's our friend Mr. Robeam. That's not his real name. That's
not his real name, is it?
It's Twitter handle. Adam Robertson down in Cornwall there with his 3-man brewing team. They do very. I've sampled some of his ales. They're very good,
Really, I haven't tried them.
Very tasty. Yeah, there was. They were unbranded at the time. One was a Blue Spot, one was a Red Spot, and I can't for the life of me remember what they became. But they were both very good. I think one was a double hops, one was a triple, or something or other. I can't remember. But yeah. It's nice to see. It kind of does their product justice, and
there's some lovely artwork as well for their actual beers. For the headband beer and for the light bulb and headlamp and all that stuff. Their actual artwork for those is lovely.
So I think we've gone full circle. We've gone from hipster grilled cheese to hipster brewing, and we've had a bit of chat about making money with our ads in the middle.
Indeed, yeah.
So I think all we can do now is bid farewell and go and enjoy St. Patrick's Day at the races.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Shall we do that?
12 Guinnesses on me.
12, noted, and I'll have a score on the Nag's Head at 3 o'clock.
Right, yeah.
Is that right? On the nose, there you go. Damn. That's it. I went to the races once.
Each way,
2-1, 7-4.
Yeah.
Kieran's the favourite. All right. Awesome. I'm going to the tote.
All right.
We will be back, probably not for a couple of weeks. Easter, travel, etc. Yeah. But we shall try and crowbar another one in to keep this momentum going.
Indeed.
And thank you to our regular listeners.
All 4 of you.
And Richard Wiggins, if you have any complaints about the audio fidelity, please direct them directly to Kieran this time.
Yes. Yeah. Speaks to me.
And he will handle them on a personal one-to-one basis. Good. I shall bid you farewell. Yeah. Yes. Go and tend to your child, and I shall speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.